Good afternoon, everyone. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Polysports. Privileged to be coming to you via Global Patriot Radio, broadcasting from blogtalkradio.com. Oh, Indy Hawk is in the chat room, and he just pointed out a statement that Dopey Joe made. I've done more than any president in history. And as he says, no joke, this might actually be a true statement. How scary is that? Anyway, welcome to Hank Jones Polysports here at Global Patriot Radio. If you want to call in to listen or interact with the show, 319-527-6706. That is our call-in number 7 days a week. If you call in on Mondays, you get to listen to the Vito Esposito Show with Vito and Big Al, Mama Mia No Sharia. Tuesdays, Eric with the Cross and Crescent discussion. Wednesdays, of course, me, Hank Jones, with Hank Jones Polysports. Thursdays, Paul Sutliff with a Sutliffian report. Those three all go at 6 p.m. Eastern time. Fridays, usually around noon, Andrew Herod is in with Conservative Casual Friday. Saturday nights from 10 p.m. to midnight, Revealing the Truth About Islam, where the beautiful Christy assists Minister Usama Dakduk. And then Sundays, Eric's back with Real Interfaith Dialogue, which is a continuation of his Cross and Crescent discussion. So I'm hanging out in Electric Hank Land today. The little mini Aussie is running around. Wife is working, of course, over at Acoustic Hank Land. And let's get to, I said last week I would bring a multitude of obituaries this week since I missed a couple weeks worth. So September 21st, we lost American World War II flying ace Dean Caswell. He was 100 years old. He tallied 7 air combat victories during World War II, and then he retired from the military in 1968 at the rank of colonel. And then September 23rd, we lost masked Mexican wrestler Starman at age 47. He remained under mask and anonymous throughout his career. Kind of a rare thing these days. We also lost Oscar-winning actress Louise Fletcher. She passed away at her home in France at the age of 88. She's obviously most noted for her fantastic performance as creepy, nosy, manipulative Nurse Ratched to Nicholson's Randall P. McMurphy. She also had an incredible turn in the 1983 flick Brainstorm with Natalie Wood and Christopher Walken. That was the film in which scientists experimented with recording life experiences via weird-looking recording headsets. And it had her character, Louise Fletcher's character, suffering a heart attack and dying and then recording the whole experience. And then Walken's character later experiences it from the recording. True story, man. True film. I mean, I'm not saying it's true. I'm saying, they did that in a film. September 24th, we lost actress Rita Gardner to leukemia at age 84. She had roles in the TV show Family Affair. Then we lost actress and stripper Kitten Natividad to kidney failure at age 74. So the next day, the 25th, we lost former New Jersey Democrat Governor James Florio to heart failure at age 85. Then on the 28th, this is kind of sad loss, we lost former rapper, actor, and avid cook, Coolio, to cardiac arrest at age 59. He was born artist Leon Ivey Jr. Unlike many rappers of his era, Coolio didn't branch out into marijuana sales or hip-hop clothing or his own brand of alcohol. He actually shared his avid interest in cooking, including educating communities on simple but healthy cooking. Then we also lost former CBS News journalist Bill Plant to respiratory failure. He was 84. Yeah, let's see. The 29th, we lost British-born American pediatric oncologist Audrey Evans at age 97. Now, in addition to her eventual moniker of quote-unquote mother of neuroblastoma, Dr. Evans was also one of the co-founders of the original Ronald McDonald House concept. An amazing concept that allows people to normally with kids, to stay for free or reduced rates at places where kids are undergoing treatment. The 30th, we lost American College Hall of Famer offensive tackle Marvin Powell to heart failure. He was just 67. Played college ball at USC. Then he went on to the NFL, played for the Jets and the Tampa Bay Bucks. On October 1st, we lost Hall of Fame Japanese pro wrestler and martial artist Antonio Inoki at age 79 to amyloidosis, which is a buildup of excess protein. He was, of course, most famous for his hybrid bout with boxing champ Muhammad Ali, which most thought, probably correctly, that it was completely scripted and staged. He went on to a brief career in Japanese politics, and then he made a somewhat public conversion to Shia Islam in 1990, but then later said he was, quote, usually a Buddhist. October 3rd, we lost former WNBA player and coach Tiffany Jackson, cancer, just 37. And then on the 4th, we lost Chicago Bears executive Jerry Vannese at age 80. He was their executive VP and general manager during their Super Bowl run in 1985 season. Then, of course, we also lost country music legend Loretta Lynn. She died in her sleep at age 90. She was truly a multi-decade legend, with her early life and career being immortalized on screen in the film Coal Miner's Daughter, which, by the way, won her portrayer Sissy Spacek a Best Actress Oscar. And then we also that day lost former NHL goalie Dave Dryden at 81. No, not Ken Dryden, Dave Dryden. On October 6th, we lost comedian and actress Judy Tenuta to ovarian cancer. She was just 72. Quirky, but funny, I got to say. And then we also lost Sara Lee. No, not that Sara Lee. Professional wrestler Sara Lee to unknown causes at age 30. October 7th, we lost actor Austin Stoker to kidney failure at age 92. He was in the original version of Assault on Precinct 13, as well as playing a somewhat pivotal role as the human advocate Bruce McDonald in the final film of the original Planet of the Apes series. It was called Battle for the Planet of the Apes. Yes, it had Roddy McDowell, but no Dr. Zaius. God, I hated Zaius, by the way. I hated him then. I hate him now. If we ever do get taken over and dominated by apes, I'm gunning for that bastard. Seriously. I mean, I have to acknowledge that it could happen because, I mean, I kind of believe in Bigfoot, so that means I have to believe in the Planet of the Apes concept. Yeah, if that happens, I'm going after Zayas hard. He sucks. We also lost former Olympic champion Bruce Nieder, who won silver and then in 1956 and gold in 1960 in the shot put. He was 89. And yesterday we lost former NHL player and coach Joe Crozier at age 93. And then sadly we also lost actress Angela Lansbury at age 96. She had her breakout role in the film Samson and Delilah. And then she went on, of course, to TV stardom in Murder, she wrote, as crime-solving author Jessica Fletcher. That's it so far on the obits for this week. Hey, don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center and answering service for your medical clinic, service company, hospital, clinic, government agency, information, polling, surveying. They do great work. They do remote work. Give them a call, 800-555-3738, or go online, alliancecommunications.com. Here's an internet laughy, sort of. Did y'all hear something is going on evidently at Camp Lejeune? Not sure what exactly, but 1,400 spam emails certainly cannot be wrong. That's just my PSA to make sure everyone's aware that something is going on or has gone on at Camp Lejeune. Another laughy, seeing love for deceased Queen Elizabeth II, Dopey Joe considers dying in order to boost his popularity ratings. I'm telling you, that's Dopey Joe considering dying in order to boost his popularity ratings. The reason I say that is this. Ha 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 ha!
It's funny because it's true.
Well, and another little laughy. The FBI is concerned that lack of actual MAGA terrorist attacks might necessitate the need for the FBI to fake another attack themselves. Here's some quickies. Dr. Fauci and his wife's net worth increased by $5 million during the COVID pandemic. Nothing to see there, I'm sure. A couple weeks ago, the Senate helped pass a continuing resolution funding bill to fund American government through mid-December. Now, for some reason, that bill included $12 billion in additional aid to Ukraine. I am not sure how that is remotely germane to funding government operations, but somehow it is. And supposedly, federal prosecutors have enough material to charge Hunter Biden on various charges, including tax and gun crimes. Now, I'd report that as a separate item, but covering FBI corruption in another item basically tells you what I personally think will, or rather won't, happen. Let's start with a story that has a somewhat happy ending. It starts out as a kind of a bummer, but it ends up pretty okay. At least I think it does. Anyway, apparently a Wendy's franchise group near Charlotte, North Carolina, fired a man after 20 years of employment. The man, whose name is Dennis Peake, has Down syndrome. Now, I won't go into all the ins and outs of Down syndrome, but suffice it to say, a company employing someone for 20 years, Down syndrome or not, means the employee has done something right, or at least hasn't done anything wrong. Alas, this franchise group terminated Dennis Peake with the explanation, according to his sister posting on social media, quote, he was unable to perform the duties of a normal person's job, unquote. Now, bear in mind, the social media post committed the ultimate pet peeve of mine, i.e. multiple exclamation points. That particular sentence, as well as the one announcing the firing, contained a mere 7 exclamation points. So by social media standards, it was tolerable for Facebook. It was still somewhat idiotic for Twitter. And anyone who has made posts like that on LinkedIn and still has an account has obviously slipped through the cracks. She continued that her brother hoped to retire from there with a big retirement party. She further noted that we, whoever that multi-person pronoun contains, may just give him that party and tell him he has retired because he doesn't understand being fired. Again, 7 exclamation points. Now, using the Hank Jones Polysports grading scale, we're going to score it as an F for pronunciation or for punctuation, a B minus for irony, and of course an A for consistency. I mean, come on, man. Managing to use the same number of multiple exclamation points is pretty exceptional, one must objectively admit. Okay, at this point, I got to ask, does everyone understand the grading scale? It goes like this. We already know she sucks at punctuation, so that's the F. Hell, I knew that after just the 2nd exclamation point. And of course, the consistency is self-explanatory. So why am I giving her a B minus on the irony? This, just for a second. If you think about it too long, the irony grade gets bumped to a solid A plus. And for what is basically a feel-good story, we don't want the irony running too thick-like or figuring too prominent-like. Meanwhile, the grammar in this piece is starting to falter. That's me. In any case, it is not, or is it not, a tad ironic that a sister... Now, let's forget the fact she took this to social media and threatened hiring EEOC lawyers, which is a bit much to air in a public social media forum. Anyway, is it not a tad ironic that she posts this? I mean, think about this, though. She said, and I quote to a degree, leaving out the aforementioned multiple instances of multiple exclamation points, said that her brother was fired because he couldn't perform the job duties of a normal person. And yes, she and everyone else should be very pissed off if that is the actual explanation. And that's terrible. I don't care who, what, when, where, why, etc. But she is indignant about the reason for the firing. But then she says they'll give that party and quote unquote tell him he was quote unquote retired because he doesn't understand being quote unquote fired. If I was to go thoroughly off the rails, I'd end that question with alternating question marks and exclamation points. 7 of each, to be precise. I mean, still, the question remains. She is ragging on the Wendy's franchise owner for the fact her brother was terminated because he can't perform the job duties of a quote-unquote normal person. And then in the same breath, she announces that they might have that retirement party and tell her brother that he retired because he doesn't understand being fired. Seriously, first of all, how does she know that? And does she think so little of her brother that lying to him is better than explaining the factual truth? But, as I said at the top, we do have that happy ending. Carolina Restaurant Group, that's the franchisee company that owns the particular location from which Dennis Peek was fired, they issued the following statement. We are committed to creating a welcoming and inclusive environment for our employees and customers. This was a very unfortunate mistake and lapse in protocol. So, yeah, they own the mistake. Good for them. More on companies who hire what I'll call unconventional employees in a moment, by the way. So the sister amended the post, said her brother was offered back his job and could start the following week. She subsequently added several other post amendments, with the third announcing her brother would not be returning to Wendy's, saying he will be having his big retirement party that he has been wanting, and added, Wendy's has offered to help with expenses and anything else they can for this special day. I feel in my heart at this point I should do what is best for my brother. I will have more details. Here are some of those little details. So basically, in other words, Wendy's is giving her enough to be able to throw that retirement party for her brother. I mean, let's face facts. That's, you know, it's not a matter of just him returning to work. She said Wendy's has offered to help with expenses and anything else they can for his special day. She says, I feel in this in my heart at this point, I should do what is best for my brother. I will have more details on Monday or Tuesday. Thank you all again for all your love and support for my brother. She said, he's always excited to go to work. He loves seeing people come in and speak to him. He loves to interact with the people. That's awesome. But then she says, after sharing the news on social media and garnering the attention of the local community as well as nationally, she said that corporate became aware of this situation and called her on October 6th, said the franchise organization was unaware of her brother's firing and that he would be reinstated on the schedule. She says, to me, that was giving a normalcy back to Dennis. Now, is it fair? No, it's not fair at all. Should there be consequences? Absolutely. You can't treat somebody like that. Now, Carolina Restaurant Group told via email, we value Dennis, have been in touch with his family, and we are looking forward to either welcoming him back to work in the restaurant or to celebrating him in a big way should he choose to retire. The company said, should Dennis retire and ever want to work again, we'll also be happy to welcome him back. Now, again, she's talking about him getting fired because he can't perform the duties of a normal person's job, but she's coddling him and kind of disingenuous. Anyway, so yeah, she's milking it a little. I get that. And yes, Wendy's and the franchisee might seem a little forced in their making it right. Be that as it may, companies who hire and maybe even cater to unconventional employees really should be applauded. And you know what I mean. The Down syndrome afflicted employee working a broom at a fast food restaurant or grocery store, the company who makes accommodations like via software or equipment or whatever, for those who are blind or deaf or have some other form. I can think of two off the top of my head. One is here, was here in Central Florida. It was a sort of a boutique upscale grocery chain called Gooding's. It was founded by a man named Jack Gooding, and you routinely saw employees in his stores that may not have been hired in other stores because, yeah, they looked or acted, quote-unquote, different or didn't perform certain tasks the same way as us in the proverbial mainstream. Another was a company in Madison, Wisconsin, or more precisely McFarland, Wisconsin. It was called Amtelco. It is called Amtelco. I used their systems for years in my former business life. They made hardware and software for what I would call the specialized call center industry, industry-specific call centers and answering services that could cater to specialized or niche markets. They were big in the medical call center field. They are. It was founded by a man that my father knew quite well. His name was Bill Curtin. He passed away back in 2001, and his family still runs the company today. He was an industry legend and innovator, and one reason is because he developed equipment and systems that could easily be operated, and I say operator, not just adapted, operated, but with various types of disabilities. Like Jack Gooding, he was truly a great man who cared about people and about life, not just money or business opportunities. So, yeah, before we go off on the heinous, heartless, thoughtless corporations that big left constantly attacks as ruining our world, let's remember most companies and company leaders, they truly do have a soul. They do care. They aren't just out to screw all the self-entitled, worthless heaps of humanity that grow larger by the day. So, yeah, it's a semi-good ending. And, yeah, it's Wendy's and all, but, you know, it has a semi-good ending. And I, like I said, I think the sister's milking it a bit. I think it's kind of disingenuous when she sits there and says he can do a normal man's job, but then she's going to pretend to tell him that he retired. That's a little much. Just explain. Hey, it was a misunderstanding. This is what happened, but it was a misunderstanding. But, I mean, I'm reading through the lines here. Between I'm seeing a company or a person that got a lot of money, and that's why she can have her brother retire. Like, in other words, they're not just paying expenses, if you get my drift. Let's get on to a sports story that will, without fail, become political once the rules review folks get a hold of it at the next round of meetings of the college football power brokers. Let me read part of it, then I'll explain it. Okay, Oklahoma State's DeMarco Jones had one of the most heads-up plays of 2022 early in his team's game against Texas Tech, and he may have set off a wave of copycats over the second half of the season. This is from a Yahoo story. Texas Tech got the ball first, scored a TD on its opening drives. They then tried to surprise Oklahoma State with an onside kick. Texas Tech executed it perfectly and got the ball back, or so it appeared. And then they have a video of the play. It says, watch Jones at the bottom of your screen. He's number 22. Look at him wave his right arm. Officials caught that. His action was a great utilization of the wording in the college football rule book. Basically, it's the fair catch rule. Once he called for the fair catch as the ball was bouncing toward him, Texas Tech was immediately prevented from recovering the kick since he is allowed an opportunity to possess the ball, calling the fair catch. And since Tech recovered it, they were actually penalized for kick-catch interference. Oklahoma State ended up getting 10 free yards along with the ball and started its drive on Texas Tech's 34. Now, according to the NCAA rulebook, a fair catch of a free kick is a catch by a Team B player who has made a valid signal during an untouched free kick. Additionally, the rulebook states that during a free kick, a player of the receiving team in position to receive the ball has the same kick catch and fair catch protection, whether the ball is kicked directly off the tee or is immediately driven to the ground, strikes the ground once, and goes into the air in the manner of the ball kicked directly off the tee. So, in essence, the Oklahoma State player, as part of the kick-receiving team, and per the rules, called for a fair catch on an onside kick attempt. It essentially made it impossible for Texas Tech to recover the onside kick without an Oklahoma State player fumbling or muffing the catch or covering up of the ball. Not sure if that rule has been in place a long time or if it's recent. In any case, it effectively, for now, could negate the effectiveness of the onside kick play going forward. Of course, that also means Iowa should be able to hold on to any late leads against Northwestern or Nebraska. Those are just about the only teams I could say that Iowa will have a lead, at least for the rest of this season. The crew and I are going to hit on that later. Still, it's an interesting factor that will obviously face review this winter. They've done stuff to onside kick rules before, so I can't imagine why this won't be any different. Moving on. So it appears the FBI met with Christopher Steele and offered $1 million for corroborating data as proof of the Steele dossier allegations against President Trump. A disturbing part, they met with Steele in October of 2021. Yeah, over 6 years after the original release of the dossier and over 5 years after the material contained in the dossier was all but debunked as both false and manufactured. A more disturbing part, They continued to go after information, even knowing Steele's previous information was absolutely fabricated. The most disturbing part, well, at least in my opinion, this is coming out only now. And it's only coming out because of Igor Danchenko, who has pleaded not guilty to a charge of lying to the FBI as part of documents released before the trial involving the Durham investigation. I mean, my God, the FBI continues to pursue President Trump, yet the White House press corps, secretary, and the mainstream media continue to both deny it and do it for nothing more than removing the perceived threat of another Trump presidency. In other words, the La Dopey Nostra, including Dopey Joe and most likely former President Barack Obama, are still weaponizing our alphabet agencies, FBI, IRS, whatever. I don't care. Whatever and whoever. Our government is being weaponized against individual candidates and, by extension, us, the citizens of the U.S. In all this time, Durham investigation has brought about one guilty plea from FBI attorney Kevin Kleinsmith, who admitted that he altered an email to get a FISA warrant against former Trump advisor Carter Page. Think about that. Yeah, I mean, they're literally weaponizing this against us to this day. Now, I know that's from October 21 that they say it happened, but they're doing it now. Think about it. They're only getting caught just now for what happened in 2021, a year ago. So in that time between October 2021 and now, you think they haven't done more? I mean, if they were meeting in October of 2021 with Christopher Steele and offering $1 million for corroboration of data corroboration, I mean, this is insanity. So LaJuan James has called out NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. No, not for being white or Jewish or uninformed about Red China. Nope. Turns out LaJuan, who, by the way, literally makes a huge chunk of his living via various deals in Red China, he wants an NBA team in Las Vegas. Not only that, LaJuan wants ownership of the franchise. Turns out LaJuan, after playing a Lakers exhibition against the Phoenix Suns in the city where everything stays, you know, what happens in Vegas stays, he was interviewed and asked about the NBA hosting games in the gambling town. Of course, LaJuan had to make it about him. Now, he noted that the commissioner was currently in Abu Dhabi, obviously accepting more Hate America money for the league. But that's when LaJuan, who apparently still likes America enough to profit off its peasant citizenry, noted that he has asked for a team in Vegas before. And he continues to put forth the idea that he should be the one to get the franchise. I mean, what with already owning pieces of Liverpool soccer team as well as a piece of the Boston Red Sox. I just saw that. That just lost the Red Sox any future support from me, by the way. It's only natural that LaJuan branch out to NBA ownership, right? I mean, think about this. This is a city where, and I know gambling is becoming more legalized everywhere, but this is a city. I mean, as I understand it, you still can't go into Las Vegas and place a bet on the University of Las Vegas teams. I mean, that's good. There's good reason for that. I mean, the players, the team would be consistently targeted for point shaving or whatever. But is it not a little ironic? Just a generation or a half generation after Pete Rose was busted for betting on the Reds and is never going to be in the Hall of Fame, that we have a guy wanting to put an NBA franchise in Las Vegas, like the betting capital of the planet. I think there'd be nothing wrong with that. I get it if just some entrepreneur wants it, but I mean, here's a guy that plays in the league and wants that. hope it never happens, but Supreme Court put the smackdown on a ruling from the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals that allowed undated mail-in ballots to be counted in Pennsylvania elections. Not surprising that they smacked it down, but the fact that the vote was 7-2 is somewhat surprising. I mean, think about this. The fact there are two people who sit on our Supreme Court who think it's okay to count undated, thus at least partially unsubstantiated, mail-in ballots is absurd. Absurd. I mean, what the hell? That is literally all but saying that at least some form of election fraud is just fine. I mean, on what damn planet is that okay? I mean, seriously. And in what court of any kind is there any semblance of legitimacy in saying, as the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals did, that no date on a mail-in ballot is, quote, immaterial? Here's the worst part, though. Pennsylvania law already states that such ballots already states that. However, the state, at least in Lehigh County, broke its own rule when allowing it to be done, which resulted in a loss for judicial candidate Republican David Ritter. Now, it says that this does not reverse that decision, but Ritter lost by 5 votes. 5 votes. And there were, I believe, 237 votes counted that did not have dates on mail-in ballots. Oh, wait, that's not the worst part, though. That dishonor goes to Pennsylvania Democrat Secretary of State Lee Chapman, who issued the following. Every county is expected to include undated ballots in their official returns for the November 8 election, consistent with the Department of State's guidance. Guidance followed the most recent ruling of the Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court, holding that both Pennsylvania and federal law prohibit excluding legal votes because the voter omitted an irrelevant date on the ballot return envelope. Today's order from the U.S. Supreme Court vacating the Third Circuit's decision on mootness grounds was not based on the merits of the issue and does not affect the prior decision of Commonwealth Court in any way. It provides no justification for counties to exclude ballots based on a minor omission, and we expect that counties will continue to comply with their obligation to count all legal votes. Okay, all legal votes. Well, Pennsylvania law already says that it's not a legal vote. Pennsylvania law says that. I mean, only in a Democrat state, I guess. I mean, does the Supreme Court now mean nothing to the Democrats? Or is it only a necessary evil when they want something overturned? It's utterly ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. The Supreme Court ruled, properly and logically, that an undated ballot is not a legitimate ballot for numerous reasons. Yeah, not the least of which is authenticity. The fact somebody doesn't put a date on it makes it a non-authentic ballot. But an elected state official now openly comes out and says that elections officials in that state must ignore a ruling from the highest court in the land. So last week, PayPal announced fines and penalties for, quote, spreading misinformation, which could result in funds up to $2,500 being confiscated from user accounts. Bear in mind, PayPal is essentially a bank subject to FDIC regulation, such as that is. In fact, PayPal then blocked several accounts in the UK that were at the forefront of debunking COVID-19 propaganda from the pro-lockdown, pro-mandate, anti-freedom crowd. After much backlash, including thousands of accounts canceling and removing their funds from PayPal, the company relented, claiming it was, quote, just a mistake. Yeah, like hell it was. It was intentional. It was abusive. Look, I have a PayPal account. I also have a Venmo account. Venmo, by the way, is owned by PayPal. I also have a Zelle account. I had no plans to cancel any of those accounts. But I also don't rely on those funds for anything other than fund money and or reimbursements. I mean, like when I'm out paddleboarding and I get a tip, I'll sometimes get people that will tip me via Venmo or PayPal. I don't use them to finance a business, and I sure as hell ain't stupid enough to use them as an important financial tool. But, I say but, canceling such accounts while making a political or social statement is really sending the wrong message. What really needs to happen is for people to file complaints and lawsuits on grounds of fraudulent or predatory banking practices. I mean, look, that they can do it on political grounds is bad enough. Think about this, if you will. Companies like PayPal, if left unchecked, will do it on the most minuscule of reasons. I mean, like, don't like me making a purchase at a ritzy store? Boom, confiscate. Don't like me eating at a fancy restaurant or even a fast food restaurant? Boom, confiscate. The issue isn't politics. The issue is fraudulent business and financial practices. But by canceling accounts and not sticking around to raise hell, people, in a de facto way, let PayPal off the hook. Guess what? PayPal relented because of cancellations, which, by the way, resulted in a loss of stock value. And as the Epic Times so artfully pointed out, PayPal was essentially saying the whole thing was, quote, misinformation about misinformation. They won't get a lot of those accounts back. They just won't. They won't recover as quickly as they should, and for one reason. They've shown they can't be trusted. They have shown they can't be trusted. I mean, look, in the business and financial world, trust is paramount. Politics, nobody cares, as long as it isn't intrusive or overbearing or manipulative. I mean, you want to support gay marriage, legalized drugs, gun control, nobody cares, as long as those positions don't become the focus or interfere with the product or service that you provide. Hell, companies suffer financial data breaches all the time. Guess what? Being open and honest and making good on it solves that for the most part. People are still going to use their Macy's cards, their Visa cards. They're still going to shop at whatever retail establishments, whether brick and mortar or online. But intentionally defraud or weaponize? No. People won't put up with that. So yeah, good job, PayPal. You have officially crossed the line from merely politically twisted leadership and management to a politically corrupt banking establishment. If Bank of America said they were going to confiscate funds deposited by illegals, by the way, Bank of America not only encourages banking by illegals, they reward them. They give them free credit cards, for instance. You and I can't get a free credit card from Bank of America. Illegals can't, believe it or not. They get debit cards with overdraft protection, in spite of the fact that they have no business having overdraft protection. You and I can't get that. Bank of America suddenly said anybody that's an illegal who does this or that, and then said we're going to confiscate funds. Not only would the public not put up with it, I shouldn't say that. Not only would the left, big left, not put up with it, but rightfully so, the FDIC wouldn't put up with it, and other banking authorities. I mean, I just simply say we're confiscating funds based on this is absurd. I mean, absurd. I'm not sure how that is legitimate. I don't know. I mean, it is a banking establishment. And they threaten to take money based on their determination of misinformation. Got another internet laughy from John Monahan on Twitter. He shared a nice one from the Babylon Bee that says, this is what it says, God move, to FBI watch list after pro-life statements. Another one. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis accused of human trafficking after dropping off his kids at soccer practice. And here's a good one. Dems propose another Inflation Reduction Act to combat the inflation caused by the Inflation Reduction Act. Oh, that's too good. That might make that one a weekly fixture. Before we go to break, some breaking news. Alex Jones, noted conspiracy theorist, uber right-winger, if you want to call that, has been ordered to pay nearly $1 billion to families of Sandy Hook victims. Now, in addition to the fact that it'll probably be overturned at some point in some way, I'd also recommend that he pay it out of his PayPal account. Going to go to a quick break, then we're coming back with the crew talking football, some Hawkeye basketball, and we will go from there. Be back in just a couple minutes. We are back here on Hank Jones Polysports. I am, of course, Hank Jones, coming to you on Global Patriot Radio at blogtalkradio.com. Our call-in number, 319-527-6706. And I believe Indy Hawk is on the line right now. Is that correct?
That's correct. How you doing, Hank?
Good. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well.
That's good. And I believe Mike is now. Mike, you there? Mike's coming in on the line.
I'm
Mike,
here,
you there?
Hank. How you doing?
Awesome. Good. How are you?
I'm here. Hanging in there pretty good, enjoying that Vince Guaraldi music on the break.
Oh, absolutely, you know, Charlie Brown.
That's right.
So last week, did we have any college football surprises in your guys' opinion? Anything surprise you, non-Big Ten, that jumped out?
No, not non-Big Ten. I'm too focused on the Big Ten, but, nothing really shocking.
Yeah. Mike, how about you?
Yeah, I can't think of anything either that was really shocking last week as far as upsets or anything like that.
Not even the Red River rivalry?
The scale of it. I'm not really surprised Oklahoma lost because they've been doing poorly, but the scale of how bad they got beat, I guess. We think we got problems with the Iowa program, but boy, Oklahoma, man, they've really got some problems.
Oh, yeah.
How quickly
no doubt.
Things turn.
Yeah, absolutely. we know it, that's for sure. How about Big Ten surprises, non-Iowa? Anything, Mike, that you saw that in the Big Ten that was a surprise?
Yeah, I thought that Northwestern-Wisconsin might be a closer game than it was, but Wisconsin really, getting rid of Chris did something. I think it was like 35-10 over Northwestern at Northwestern.
42-7, I think it was.
I'm sorry, 42.
42-7.
Okay. Purdue beating Minnesota.
That wasn't last week, was it? Wasn't that the week before?
Wait, am I off a week? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then nothing too remarkable.
Who did Purdue play
last?
I remember. Who did Purdue beat last weekend?
Oh, now you got me here.
Maryland.
Maryland.
No,
that's right.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's right. And that was on a – oh, talk about controversial. So, Indy, anything jump out at you? Any surprises in the Big Ten?
Well, just you always wonder how a team responds on a coach being fired midseason. So, yeah, the Wisconsin thing was a little surprising, but I think they rallied around the firing there. But Michigan. I'm interested in how good Michigan really is with the quarterback. Kids, J.J. McCarthy looks pretty dang good.
We'll find out Saturday, I think. Yeah, because they play Penn State. That should be a good game.
Yep.
Nobody surprised by Nebraska's resurgence winning at Rutgers by a point?
I'm sorry, who's that tank? Nebraska?
No, Rutgers. Yeah, the Nebraska winning at Rutgers by a point.
Well, they've won
huge.
Like, they've won like three in a row with Mickey Joseph at the helm.
No, two in a row.
Is it two? I thought it was like maybe you're right.
No, their first
anyway.
Game with him, they got throttled by Oklahoma actually. So
that's right.
So
that's
what
right.
does that tell
but,
you? Oklahoma is getting beat up by their conference, and yet they just absolutely crushed Nebraska in our conference. So.
Yeah, that tells me that Nebraska's not very good, even though they beat Rutgers.
Yeah. So, what about, did either of you see the actual play of the, I saw a replay, but see the actual play of the penalty that kept Maryland from tying Purdue?
I did not.
I did not either.
Okay. It was a illegal receiver downfield. Now, think about it. That play starts from the 2-yard line. Where was the receiver that he was illegally downfield on a pass into the end zone? I still don't get that. I think officiating is really taking a hit this year. That's for sure. So,
I think so. Yeah, I think we saw that in some Iowa games.
Yep, a couple different ones. Okay, so, Indy, we'll start with you. Last week's Iowa-Illinois game. Let me count the nightmares, but give us a couple just things that just shocked you to see.
Oh, boy. I thought we were going to talk basketball.
We will. We are going to talk basketball, but we're going to get to football first.
Yeah,
on a positive note, yeah.
you just keep looking for this team to put it together, like what's going on. I was thinking – last year we had 10 wins. I know Kirk mentioned that in the press conference. Someone kind of come at him. We were 10-4.
Yeah.
I think I picked us to win like 7 games. But we were 3-1 or 3-0 in 1-score games. And that's kind of, that's kind of a 50-50 unless there's some reason you're winning those. This year that's been reversed. So who knows? Is the fluke last year or this year? But definitely not good.
No, it's not. I mean, our defense can only do so much, obviously. But, Mike, what was there? I mean, let's not even think about what was positive. What jumped out at you as far as, God, we still can't get it right?
Well, I mean, it was just more of the same, wasn't it, offensively? I just cannot do anything. I mean, I do think maybe Illinois was the best defense we played all year. They do have an excellent defense. But, when Iowa gets the you know, it was really 3-0 in turnovers. Now there was a late interception in the game. Iowa got themselves, shouldn't have been in a position where they're, you know, they're trying to catch up at the end, but basically it was 3-0 until then, including a recovery at the 4-yard line, and then another one at the Illinois 35. And we got 3 points out of it and negative yards each time. And I think that I read an article that even a bad offense should have got it in from the 4 and should have got more than 3 points out of those 2 turnovers. And that's what's so frustrating, because we just cannot seem to do anything offensively. I was hopeful a little bit. There were some a little bit better at times, sort of flashes against Michigan in terms of just moving the ball, although it was disappointing to not get it in at the 6-yard line when we could have made it 20-14. Yeah. But there was really nothing in the Illinois game that I could see that gives me any hope about the offense that's currently constructed.
Yeah.
Yeah, the offensive line is a question. We talked about that last year. You know, yeah. What's happened? This is a program built on the offensive line. The offense, you know, 1-2 tight ends, run the ball, you know, and throw the ball off the run. But
yep. We
can't run the ball. And that's, you know, that started last year. You know, we changed out Polisek.
Yeah.
So you got, who knows, George Barnett's the new offensive line. I don't understand that. It's not like the recruiting has dropped off. It's just something appears to be wrong. We can't run the ball.
Yeah. Could it be Chris Doyle, you think? I mean, was he that instrumental?
People have been talking about that. It was also been pointed out that Doyle, because somebody said, well, what about the defensive line? But it's been pointed out that Doyle worked a lot with offensive line personnel, because one of the things he talked about is, look, you know, because they used to ask, why don't Iowa linemen, do 500 reps at 225 on the bench at the combine? And Chris Doyle made the point, well, I don't really care how much our guys could bench, because frankly, if a guy could bench that much, it means he's spending too much time on his back, and that's not good for an offensive lineman. You know, so there's that factor of it. You know, kind of makes you wonder. You know,
but
I think that's a
great point. Marshall Yanda, who was an all-star, all-pro with the Ravens. He would go back on his off seasons. He wouldn't train with the Ravens strength coach. He'd go back to Iowa.
Yeah.
That can't be underestimated.
No, I agree. I think it can't. I mean, his successor by all accounts is well-liked, is well-respected. I mean, he learned under Doyle, but something's wrong. I mean, here's the other thing, though. I was talking with Vito the other day about he was just saying, you know, what is happening, and I made a point, you know, people talk about total starts, you know, how many starts come back, how many, you know, starts are the, and, you know, that's a misleading thing. It's, you know, because just number of starts isn't necessarily the whole, it's how many starts do they have together. And, you know, just this year alone, we don't have consistency in who started. I mean, it just doesn't, something is wrong. I mean, Indy, what frightens you more? The fact that we ran a shovel pass in the red zone to our tight end, Sam Laporta. I mean, what's more scary, that or a Biden air ball handshake? What, you know, I mean.
they're both not good. They both make you think, am I still in America?
They're both the products of cognitive minds that are in, no, I'm just kidding, decline.
Well, but here's the other thing. We seem, I mean, if you look at our numbers, we're not running 50-50, running passing. We're passing more than we're running. At least it appears that way. It feels that way. Well, man, that's never been Kirk's way. I mean, yes, there's balance in different years, but it's predicated on the fact that the run game is what is successful, and that's what opens up the play action, and that's why, you know, this, it's right. Like there's no run-first mentality to me. even when they do.
I think that, though, I mean, the way I see it, maybe just slightly different than that, is that, yeah, you're right about that, that we pass off the run. That's what good Iowa teams have done for the last 20 years in the Ferentz era.
Yeah.
But the problem here is that because our passing game, just as a standalone for a second, is so weak,
yeah.
They're able to stack, and they've been doing this the last couple of years, stack the lines and just shut the run down and daring us to throw when we can't.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and it all, I suppose, comes back to the poor offensive lines that we've had the last 2 years. But I think there's been a tendency to, you know, I think part of a good running, and Ferentz used to be better at this, I think, is the first half of games, the running game might not look that good, but you keep pounding. And then in the second half, the defenses start to wear down, and you're getting 5 yards a pop every time. And we seem to not getting away from trying to establish the run maybe a little too quick. But I also think that that's compounded by the fact that our passing game is in such a state that they don't respect it, and so we're seeing 8 men in the box constantly, blitzing constantly, and an inability to pick up blitzes and to throw the ball effectively. If we could throw the ball early a little effectively, which I don't think we've been able to do pretty much all this year, you might get them back off the line, and then the run can open up a little bit. But we just haven't been able to do that it goes back to the offensive line.
Yeah.
And Petras just, you know, Petras could be passable if he could get, but he's really not getting any protection, and he has to have it to be passable. He gets any kind of pressure, and it's just not good.
In 2020, that he and even showed at times last year that he is a good enough quarterback.
Right.
You know, I just don't get it. But you know, going forward, Indy, what would you suggest for that? I mean, if you were, you know, we've got a bye week and then we've got Ohio State. What would you tell the offensive staff for the Hawks?
Jeez, walking in at Ohio State, I mean, that you want the, I don't know, forfeit? Ohio State looks just amazing. So, you know,
yeah.
Suck it up, go there. We're Iowa, and man, don't rule it out. You never know, because we have players. They need to put it together. I don't know. There's something, you know, there's some things going on. If you take a step back, you know, if Michigan's the number 4 team in the country, which that's where they're rated, it wasn't that bad a game. I mean, we played well. We just got to do some things better. You know, I would try to focus on that. You know, and you know, say, guys, if we put the offensive line together, you know, we can control the ball. You know, Kirk Ferentz got lit up this week on Twitter for saying, it was something around what's the most overrated stat, and it was, he said, yards, offensive yardage.
Right.
And I agree with him 100% because, you know, they're making fun of him because he got the worst offensive, you know, football. But it's true. You know, if we can control the ball, keep the ball out of their hands, that's what we wear people down. That's what Hawkeye Mike just said. You know, you lean on them, you know, 12, 14 play drives. The problem is we just haven't been able to do that. We've never been an offense that rolls up 600 yards a game.
No,
it's just we ball control, play good defense.
Well, I also wonder what you guys think if the Illinois quarterback Sitkowski doesn't have his elbow on the ground and that fumble and the return for the touchdown had counted. And I think then Iowa wins that game 13-6 probably. You know, what would we be saying right now? Just that one play that you know,
yep.
they took the touchdown back when they did the, I mean, he was down. I mean, he did have his elbow down, but I mean, it was very close as far as the ball could have come loose. right before it hit or something, you know. So that play stands. I think the conversation is, despite the shortcomings of the offense, might be very different. You know, we would have pulled that 13-6 win off at Illinois, who's a good team, by the way. They're a good team.
Yep.
Yeah, they are.
They're 24th in the nation.
This is not a bad team that we lost to, and it was at Illinois.
Yep.
And you know, I mean, I thought our defense overall was excellent. I mean, this is the team that put 34 points on Wisconsin up in Madison the week before, and it was nothing like that. And Iowa really, I think, should have won the game for a whole host of reasons. But everything being the same, just that one play stands. And I think Iowa wins the game. Well, you know, it's just like we don't fumble at the goal line on against Iowa State, and it's 14-3. That game's over,
yep.
And we'd be 5-1. But you know, this is how close things can be. As Indy Hack pointed out, we were 3-1 last year in one score games. I think we're 1-2 this year.
That's a great point.
You know, it's just a lot different.
If we were 5-1 right now, how different would this conversation be? Just exactly what Mark and Mike just said.
Exactly.
Yep.
With all the shortcomings we have.
Only two Big Ten games worth picking this week. Penn State at Michigan. Indy, who do you got?
I'm taking Michigan all the way. I'm trying to decide how good they are. And, man, I would love to see the Big Ten get two teams in the playoff. I don't think it's going to happen, but
no.
Michigan has a lot of potential. I kind of hope they win big, but this JJ McCarthy looks like the real deal. So we'll see.
Yeah, he definitely.
I think Michigan rolls though.
Yeah, Mike, how about you?
You know, I'm picking up the slack this year from brother Tommy because I think. I don't disagree with anything that Indy Hawk said. And I think if you just go strictly by the heart, by the head, you pick Michigan, that Michigan. But Penn State has kind of been quietly, to me anyway, sort of quietly impressive. And they're undefeated. And Sean Clifford's having a pretty good year. And I think they're a decent team. And I'm just – it's a pure upset pick. And I think Penn State's going to upset them. Michigan's shown some vulnerabilities, even in the Iowa game. And certainly look at the Maryland game, which was up at Ann Arbor. That was a real dogfight that they pulled out.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sure Michigan's favored, but that's my upset pick, just pure upset. I think Penn State's going to upset Michigan. It's going to be a hell of a game. And you can focus, it's a game we can all focus on a little bit because, you know, Iowa's not playing. You start thinking, well, what games to look for? I think that's the top game to me.
I'm going on DraftKings right now based on what Hawkeye Mike just said and putting some money on Michigan, Penn State.
Okay, so.
What's the spread on that game?
I was just trying to find that. I don't know.
It's not, 7-8, ESPN 8-8? Does not publish that stuff, so that's the only thing I look at when it comes to score stuff. I mean, Michigan is the line is Michigan minus 7, and the over-under is 51.5.
Sounds about right.
Boy, that's a lot. Minus 7's quite a bit. You know, like you said.
I figured it's at Michigan, that's probably the main thing. If this was up Penn State, it'd be a pretty close to even game, I think.
Mike, we'll start you on the next game. This is a good one. First of all, Mohamed Ibrahim is expected to play. So Minnesota at Illinois. The 4-1 Minnesota at number 24 and 5-1 Illinois.
That is a good one. You know, I was a big Minnesota fan, not because I like them, but I thought they were a good team. And then that Purdue game was a bit of a head scratcher to me. Maybe I'm putting too much into that, but I will say this. I think that Minnesota has a good offense, and that's what you need to beat Illinois. If I would have had any offense at all, we would win the game. And it, like I said, if that one play on the fumble return for a touchdown had stood, we would have won the game with a very bad offensive production. So I do think Minnesota will show a little more offense. I do think the one thing is that Minnesota's defense has shown some sparks, but they're not Iowa's defense. So Illinois,
yes,
conversely, will probably do better offensively. But I think Minnesota's going to win a close game.
Okay. Andy, how about you?
I'm just happy to see a good matchup in the West Division of the Big Ten.
Yeah.
I go back to
probably the two best
Connors.
Teams right there. Yeah, two best teams in the West right there.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the last year of the divisions, but whenever they can get rid of that. But brother Tommy was big on Illinois last year. I think I would go
off
Illinois on this one. Yep. Sometimes it happens.
Well, here's interesting. Minnesota is a 6.5-point favorite. But more surprising,
I would take Illinois with the point.
The over under on this is 39. So, now here's the last game. It's not a Big Ten game. It's Iowa State at number 22, Texas, who already has two losses, but they're still number 22. Indy, who do you go with there?
Where's the game at?
It's at Texas.
Yeah, I would go Texas there. I think Iowa State's, they're reeling a little bit. I think they're, 0-3 in the conference? So
yes,
they
are.
They've got to put some things together.
Yeah.
Mike, how about you?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Iowa State's back on their heels. They just haven't been able to get two tough losses in a row. They really should have won that Kansas State game and also the game before. I think they had a full shot against, was it Baylor?
Yeah.
But they can't. They just couldn't get it done in the crunch. And going down there to Texas, Texas has some flaws, but they've got they're coming off a big win against Oklahoma. They've got a pretty high-powered offense. I just don't think Iowa State can stay with them.
So here's the over/under on this game: 49.5. Anybody want to take a guess at what the line is? In other words, the favorite.
You mean who's to win?
In other words, well, that Texas is favored. So what the spread is? What would you guess the spread would be?
I don't know. I'm going to guess maybe 10 points.
Andy, how about you? What would you guess?
I would say maybe 6.5.
16.5.
Ooh,
wow.
16.5. So this is tailor-made for Matt Campbell to pull off one of those major shockers.
Let's go, Campbell.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's another shock, though. Syracuse hosting NC State. Syracuse ranked 18 is 5-0. Here's another real shocker. James Madison, 5-0, number 25. So, yeah, James Madison has cracked the top 25 in football.
When's the last time that happened?
I'm guessing like never. I've got to believe never. Tennessee, Alabama,
it's funny. My first when I went to law school, I stayed in. There was a dorm at the time for law students, and since I didn't know Tulsa very well, I signed up to stay there. And I had a roommate. Well, actually, you have your own rooms, but you share kind of common shower. Anyway, point being, guy was one of the first sort of roommates was a JMU grad, James Madison, which I'd never really even heard of.
Where is James Madison?
I think Harrisonburg, I want to say, Virginia.
Oh, okay.
Kind of in Western Virginia. I think I could be wrong on that though. I don't know. I can Google it and find out. But anyway, he was big on the James Madison stuff. I think they were a little better at basketball at that time.
Yes,
in
they
fact,
were.
In fact, I think in the early 90s, their coach was Lefty Drizel, the old Maryland coach, was coaching at JMU. So he was a little more focused on that. And he was a JMU. The only guy I ever knew that was a JMU grad.
Wow. So let's swerve.
30 years
Let's swerve basketball. And this is, Mike, you were looking to –
Agree. Maybe we could be positive about. Yeah.
So, okay. Give me some stuff on the basketball front that excites you?
Yeah, well, you know, one reason they Iowa last week had their media day, and well, I'll tell you what excites me a little bit. I do think Chris Murray, and maybe the hype's a little too much, but there's a lot of hype on this guy. He's preseason All Big Ten first team, and they're picking him as one of the impact players nationally. I think there's some reason to believe that because he showed some sparks there. I don't know. He doesn't have to be key. He doesn't have to be his brother to be good. He just has to do what he does. He can light up he can score. And it's good to have him back. You know, remember he went through the combine and then decided not to go forward, which I think was a good move. Certainly a good move for Iowa. But Iowa has, and then we've got Tony Perkins, who I thought toward the end of the year last year was looking really good. Tyler Ulis. And, of course, I know there's a little controversy about the McCaffrey brothers, but they're both back, and I think they'll at least – I don't think they'll both start. Patrick probably will. Connor will probably be coming in off the bench. But supposedly he's even been working more on his shooting. And he showed some spark last year shooting the ball. And he didn't play baseball, so he's just been concentrating on basketball. This is his last year. So we'll see if that pays any dividends. But I'm also excited a little bit about, I think, Peyton Sanford. I expect him to make some real stride. And I think this is a potential for – and then, of course, some of the big men, Rebraca, I think, will be strong. And maybe this Josh Ogundele showed some spark. You remember that Illinois game? He did pretty well when he was up against Kofi Coburn. But there's also a couple freshmen. This Josh Dix and then what's his name? DeSante. They're going to be
DeSante Bowen.
Last name now.
DeSante Bowen.
Bowen, yeah. Bowen. There's some talk about them. They're kind of, you know, pretty prized recruits, I think, and they're expecting maybe they might contribute right away. So this could be a team with some real depth, and I don't know. I think they're kind of picked in the middle, but I think maybe they might be pretty good. So I'm kind of hopeful. You know, maybe I'm going to be wrong, but there's some grounds for optimism here. And so I kind of, you know, right now anyway, I'm kind of looking forward to the start of the season. We'll see. They've got some tests early. I think they play Duke, although this will be the first year without Krzyzewski, so that'll be interesting. And then I think they play Georgia Tech in the ACC Challenge. They're playing Duke in some tournament at Madison Square Garden. So we got a couple games, and then we do get Iowa State, who after last year could be pretty formidable. We get them in Iowa City. So anyway, I think there's some grounds that this Iowa team may not be too bad.
Okay. Indy, your thoughts?
I just want to start by saying I hope Hawkeye Mike is right and I am wrong. I'm not quite as optimistic, I guess. As far as the positives, you know, Chris Murray, my goodness. That guy is absolutely amazing. I mean, if you look at his numbers last year, he should have been an All-American last year. He just played 19 minutes a game. If someone can figure out, you know, why did Keegan not play the year before behind Connor? But you've got, you know, just double his minutes, and you're getting like 18, 19 points a game, 10, 11 rebounds. He's a phenomenal player.
Yep.
I don't know, maybe it's a strategy, you know, for Einstein.
I think he's a better outside shooter than Keegan was. I think he's a better if he gets the looks from three-point range, I think he's a little, you know, as good as Keegan can be.
Yeah.
I think Chris has showed that he's even better this year.
And actually, Chris hit a crucial in the Big Ten tournament against Rutgers, so I guess it would have been the quarterfinals. You know, Rutgers got off to a quick lead, but he hit near the end of the first half a three-pointer that completely changed the complexion of the game, I thought. I mean, I thought from that point on, everything about the game changed. And I think that's, you know, he has that, you know, Keegan can hit the shots too, but Chris – there's a little bit more of a confidence and smoothness to Chris from the outside shooting perspective, I think.
Yep.
That I think helps. So.
Yeah, Katz from ESPN, KATZ, that dude, he's projecting Chris Murray as the surprise player of the year. I'm like, well, that's that's pretty easy. I mean, just take his numbers. For some reason, he wasn't playing. He's 20-10. Duh. That was pretty weak. But yeah, I'm just going to watch Chris.
I mean, he'll get a lot more minutes this year, I think. I mean, you'd agree with that, wouldn't you, Dion? He's going to play a lot.
Oh yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I hope so. But you still got Connor and Patrick.
Here's who we have though in our first 10 games. We've got Seton Hall. That must be that Gavitt games or when we play Big East. Then we've got Clemson on the 25th of November. I assume that's like a Thanksgiving tournament deal. Then we've got Georgia Tech on the 29th, and then we've got Duke on December 6th, and Iowa State.
And
December 8th.
Iowa State's in there, too.
Yeah. Got Wisconsin.
And I know there's, by the way, I know there's a lot of optimism and aims, about, and they should be because of that tournament run they had, which Iowa can only envy.
Iowa
State. Well, it's not going to get any better. Iowa State.
I think they've got everybody back.
They signed the number 5 player for the year after next year. So I mean, this is going to be a 5-10 year drought. But that guy can coach. He can recruit. And you know, I'll ask you guys.
Axel Traeger or whatever. Yeah.
Osselberger.
Yeah,
the coach. But Iowa was recruiting a guy, J.P. Estrella, 4-star recruit, I think the class of 2023. And they said, because I've heard a lot about this NIL, Iowa Collective, where they're going to share it with everybody. So if I'm a basketball recruit, you share your NIL money with the bowling team and everybody else. But what I read was this guy really wanted to go to Iowa, J.P. Estrella, 4-star big man, but he just couldn't pass up the money, the difference in NIL. And I can't remember where he went, but he went to, I think, Vanderbilt or something like that. But anyway, you guys heard anything about that? Like, is this thing going to – I mean, NIL is a big thing. Are we in that bad a position because we're sharing that money? I don't know.
Well, I think that – the only thing I can think of the reason that we would be doing that is anticipation of it becoming a Title IX issue, meaning by sharing it with the women's teams and stuff, it then becomes when or if, you know, because let's face it, if it becomes their employees, you know, it's one thing that now that they're just not employees, they're not independent contractors, they're just student athletes. And by having it done separately off the, you know, not having it done by the school, there's no Title IX issues. But if they get classified as employees 3 years from now by Congress or whoever, guess what? Title IX comes right into play. So my guess is that they're anticipating that. That would be my guess.
Well,
by the way,
there was a story today, I was just reading earlier, a couple hours ago, about Caitlin Clark with the Iowa basketball women's star. Signing a pretty big NIL deal, I believe somebody like Nike or somebody like that. So it's out there anyway. And
so do they?
You know,
share that? I'm like, what is it?
No.
What is it?
The NIL collective is like, think of it as the alumni association. You can make donations to it, all that stuff. But that's the collective. I mean, you know, what any player can get individually, I think he or she can keep for themselves, you know. I mean, already they're doing deals together. Like Justin Britt's parents said he wasn't going to be big on going out and looking for all kinds of NIL deals because he wasn't really, you know, in a position to do that. But they're doing a lot of stuff where, like, you know, a group of the players get together and go down and appear at, you know, Indy Hawks car dealership and sign autographs or whatever. So, you know, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Well, I would like to hear Indy Hawk. He didn't quite complete his thought, I think, on what he was indicated. He wasn't quite as optimistic as he thought I was being. I didn't know if that's because he thinks the McCaffrey brothers get kind of in the way too much and that Franz, you know, got his own kind of nepotism going on there. I know there's some concerns about that, which I have,
think
too.
I think the offense runs through Patrick McCaffrey, and that's, you know, it should be. I've read some articles on, hey, we're going to share the ball a lot more this year. Well, we don't have the athletes to share the ball. It should go through Chris Murray. He's the only NBA draft pick I think we have.
Don't you have any optimism about Tony Perkins? Because I thought he looked pretty darn good at the end of the year last year.
Yeah, he's good. He's athletic. He's just a little raw. But, yeah, he's got potential. But, you know,
A lot of people made the argument that the change to Perkins was instrumental in the turnaround, you know, the mini turnaround.
Yeah, I think so. At least in the tournament. Yeah. I don't know what, you know, we can talk about what happened in the Richmond game. It was just they just laid an egg, and it's just a symbol of Fran not being very successful in the NCAA tournament. You keep hoping that some year he'll get that turned around, but, boy, it was a disappointment last year. I think if you remember, they were picking Iowa to get – a lot of people were picking Iowa to get to the Final Four. I think Vitale had them in the championship game.
Yep. I just don't think we're very athletic. I think we're really unathletic. You know, Peyton Sandberg, great player, great shooter. Patrick McCaffrey is just unathletic. You know, and he's saying he's working on his rebounding, but he was horrible last year. Defense rebounding, that's what wins championships. These great teams lock you up, and we get against these great teams in the NCAA tournament, and they just shut us down because we can't match up with them. So that's what I worry about is just our athletes. And then, you know, Perkins, he helps it. You know, and I'm all about Tony Perkins. He's from the Indianapolis area. So that's all good. But yeah, I think we got some – a little bit to overcome there. I hope we do. I think we got some potential. I think Chris Murray is one of the top five players in Iowa basketball history. We just don't know it right now. 20 and 10 guys.
That's quite a statement.
But what's really weird is I'd like to hear you guys explain this. Here's a guy who played 17 minutes a game last year, and they're talking about him like he's a lottery pick. Now,
who's that?
What is that?
Who are we talking about? Oh, Chris. Okay.
Chris Murray.
Chris Murray.
People are like, Chris Murray, look for Chris Murray to explode on the scene. He's going to be an NBA pick. He's going to be a, you know, surprise star. Well, I can tell you that based on what he played last year, but why, you know, I don't know.
Well, you remember, if you remember, just remind you a little bit, we talked about this last year, at least in the second half of the season, about why was he not in more? Why was he not starting? Why didn't Fran have both Murray brothers playing together a lot more than they did and starting? We're picking this up. But, yeah, no, I do agree with that. It was a head-scratcher why Chris Murray wasn't get – because he had a couple games where he did kind of get the chance to show what he could do, and he was scoring 25 points a game, if you recall. And it just seemed a little – it did seem – I think Fran's got this thing where – and maybe it has to do with his sons too, where he really likes the idea of spreading the minutes around. And getting 10, you know, 10 players in all the time. And I think that kind of made Chris Murray's PT suffer a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, I look at it a different way. Like I said, I've never been the hugest Fran McCaffrey fan. I don't think he's a bad coach. I just don't think he's as good as a lot of people think he is. And this is not as my anti-politics stance because he's, you know, he's in the past talked about he and his wife are big fans of Obama. So that's certainly a character flaw, of course, but
I actually did.
Here's the thing that's kind of frightening. Okay. So you could use the excuse, well, Chris Murray didn't get more time because basically he was essentially the same player as Keegan Murray, but you know, but it's the same position, et cetera. You know what? I mean, Hayden Fry did it with Tim Dwight. I mean, Tim Dwight could have, you know, if Tavian Banks isn't there, Tim Dwight is our tailback for a couple of years, you know. Yet Hayden Fry found a way to get Tim Dwight on the field and utilize him. You know, I can't believe that we couldn't figure out a way to get Chris Murray on the floor more. I think that's a coaching thing. I just don't think he's as good a coach as a lot of people thought he was coming in. I think he's a decent coach. I think he can win in the Big Ten. I don't think overall he can dominate the Big Ten, and I don't think he'll ever on a national stage. I mean, I'm still waiting for him to get to the second round, you know.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, to the third round.
That's the big failure, and that's really, I think, where – I mean, I think there's a decent chance, better than – more likely than not, that we'll be good enough to get into the tournament. So we'll see. You know, has he ever won? I guess he did. They've had a couple of years where they won the first game. But
yep.
I mean, you know, let's see if we get there and can win. I mean, it's really been disappointing the last 2 years. And the Garza team, they won the first round and then had that just terrible game against Oregon, which was, it seems like a first round loss almost. But
yeah,
I think
that's a good goal, you know. You got, I mean,
what?
Yeah,
just get to the second weekend.
Make the tournament. Yeah, get to the second weekend, and I'd take that in a heartbeat. The Big Ten's kind of open.
Exactly.
Like,
when's the last time that 15 happened?
15 of the top 20 scorers from last season are gone. So, I mean, who knows? Someone could catch lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm very much of the opinion that, I mean, you know, Rebraca, he is who he is. He's serviceable. He's decent. He's gonna make some plays. He's gonna do some stuff. But you know, Ogundele, I mean, his lack of development. And I shouldn't say that because he hasn't really been given a chance, I think, in a game situation.
Right.
And I can't speak for. And you know what? People sit there and bitch about, you know, Ferris saying so and so looks good in practice. Well, guess what? That's really the best way you can evaluate a guy. If a guy sucks in practice, and you walk out there, I mean, think about it this way: if a guy sucks in practice and you walk out there and say, "But we thought he was a gamer," and it falls on its face. Then guess what? You're an idiot, you know? And that's why people that say that are idiots. When people say, I do hope
Ogundele gets a little bit more of a chance to show what he can do, because I think there were a couple occasions where he showed he could do something. That matchup with Kofi Coburn in the second game against Illinois, they put him in, and I thought he was pretty effective. He's really about the only guy I saw that could guard Coburn.
He did very well in the Purdue game in the Big Ten Championship,
yeah.
I thought.
Yes, that too, yes.
Yeah.
So I think he needs to get more time and give him – I hope Fran will give him that opportunity this year.
Yeah, let's hope. I mean, you're talking about a guy
yeah.
that entered the portal and then withdrew. I mean, something's weird
yeah.
there.
Well, I think
he entered the portal. There was
got
no
talked
interest.
Out of it. Yeah. Oh, you think that's what it was? It was just that simple.
I don't think he was even in it.
I don't think he was even in it long enough to gauge that. That's what I think is kind of odd about it.
Yeah.
So, who knows? I just don't even. It's hard to say where to go from there. I mean, I just Riley Mulvey. Remember, he was a guy that came in last year, and you know he reclassified from while he was in high school and came in a year early or whatever, and. You know, I don't know what, you know, was he like 6'10", 6'11"?
Yeah.
Was that, I mean.
The problem with Mulvey is that we didn't really get to see him do too much last year. And I also kind of worry because he's like 6'11", 125 or something. He's not a wide body. And, you know, and I just wonder if he can really stack up through the Big Ten season. You know, I hope I'm wrong. But I'm not counting on him to be a big contributor.
Highly rated recruits. I mean, Bowen, you know, Mulvey. They're just not. They may develop into that, and Fran can turn them into that. But they're just not. They're not going to come out of the chute ready to go.
Okay, so Indy, I'll ask you this first, and then Mike follow up on it. The loss of Joe Toussaint to the portal, and eventually, I guess he ended up at West Virginia. What do you think that? How do you think that affects us?
I don't think it's that big a deal. I don't think. I mean, I don't think we would have been that good with him, and
yeah.
probably not that good without him. I mean, I think we'll be okay. I mean, a fringe NCAA tournament team, probably at the top end, I'm hoping.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever was going to be a big-time player. He takes that next step, so to
sure.
speak. But he was a great athlete. That's the kind of guy we need, athleticism, get out on the perimeter and defend. But
yeah. Mike, how about you?
Well, I maybe have more regrets about losing him because I don't know. I thought he was a real spark in a lot of games last year. Not a huge offensive score, but, man, he could play defense. And I just kind of scratched my head about why he left.
I don't.
And I don't know. I'd like to know what you think.
Well, he lost his starting job. He lost minutes. I mean, yes, he still got minutes, but he didn't have nearly as many minutes. And it was clearly the ball was taken as point guard. The ball was taken out of his hands. I mean, I think, you know, put it this way, same reason I could see Padilla or another of our quarterbacks entering the portal after this season. If you don't give the guy any snaps, don't give him any shot.
Right.
Or take the ball.
Well, I'm thinking the only reason Padilla, to jump back on that, has stayed is because he thinks he's got a good shot at being the starter next year. What if Petras comes back? I mean, I hope that doesn't happen. I really do, but he's got really nowhere to go. Yeah.
I think the coaches sit him down because that is still at the school's option. I think the coaches sit him down and say, "Hey, your career here is over." That's personally what I would guess.
Okay.
You know,
I hope that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. So, you know,
not stellar is when you have a year of eligibility and say, "Yeah, your career here is over."
Yeah, we don't want you to take it.
Well, it's been done before. There have been guys that had fifth and sixth year that end up not staying.
We're just not, and I don't blame, you know, the problems that we're having on offense go beyond Spencer Petras, but we know this guy is not, we've seen what he can do. He's not going to get better. And this offense has no chance of making any real advances as long as he's the quarterback. And that's not to blame by any stretch, blame him for everything that's going on because, if he had a better offensive line, he'd be a more serviceable quarterback than he is. But we are where we are. And this year, we're to the point now, we're through the halfway mark. It would be unfair to take somebody like Padilla, I think at this point, or Labus, and try to inject them as a starter in the Ohio State game when they haven't played it down all year. Maybe after this, they get to Ohio State, take a bad loss, give Padilla a chance against Northwestern when we come home to Kinnick or something like that. But to say like, which Kirk's not going to do, but it would be unfair, I think, to try to throw Padilla or Labus in against Ohio State. That's just, that would not be good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just I never know the last couple of years. I think that's with McCaffrey. I never know where to feel, how to feel coming into the season. I just don't. I mean, I'm going to have to see them. And, fortunately or unfortunately, we have a pretty tough first 10 games. And I think that's fortunate because if we go into the Big Ten season with three or four losses, that pretty much tells us how well we have to do to have a realistic shot at getting to the NCAA tournament. So, there's that.
I need to tell you guys on the beauty of low expectations.
What now? I'm sorry?
I need to sell you guys on the beauty of low expectations. Then you're happy, if you didn't make the tournament.
Right, right. Well, look, there's a lot of question marks, I think, about this Iowa team. I just think that there's some grounds to think we may do okay. But like you say, we've got some tough games early, and that'll tell a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Well, guys, we've pretty much come up on anything that we've, there's really nothing more to go on at this point. So say we call it a night and rest up for next week and enjoy the bye week, of course. There are some good games to watch, like I said, including Tennessee, Alabama. But in the meantime, it's time to take a week off and know that the Hawks won't lose this weekend. So it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling. So
unfortunately, we're celebrating.
That's right. That's what we're reduced to right now. Yeah.
Exactly. So thanks for being on, as always. We will talk to you all next week and, of course, be texting over the weekend, I'm sure.
Thanks, Hank.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Hank. Talk to you later. As always, Hawkeye Mike and Indie Hawk. I've got a question here. I'm not sure who it is, but I know who it is. Hey, you're on Hank Jones Polysports. Did you have a question? Oh, maybe not. Maybe somebody who didn't really have a question just accidentally hit the one on their phone. Okay. Good enough. Okay, thanks. Thanks all. I want to thank Mike and Indy Hawk for being on, of course, this week. A lot of stuff going on. Keep vigilant. The PayPal story, I think, is one that's not over. I actually believe that, we're going to hear more, because I really do believe that what they did wasn't just a stupid political business move. I think there are some financial institution type ramifications. As a financial institution, taking funds that they couldn't legitimately take. Now, they may not have taken any. They did freeze some accounts, but I think there's some regulatory issues that they might be facing. So follow that a little more closely. I'm not telling you to cancel your PayPal account. I'm not telling you to go out and open a PayPal account. I'm just saying, watch the story. Also watch some election stuff. We're getting close. I'd like to have Hawkeye Mike on and others on when we get closer to the elections, just to sort of, at a certain point, handicap them, if you will, and see how that goes. In the meantime, I want to thank Indy Hawk and Mike for being on. Sue from New Mexico, my big sister, for listening in on the phones. There was Duck Northwest stopped by for a little bit. There's a couple of numbers that have been called in recently that I'm not recognizing. So, buys, or maybe they're just big fans of the show. Let's hopefully it's the latter. In the meantime, folks, have a great weekend. Have a great week. Enjoy the fall, because it's a great time of year. Go out, get you some apples, see some fall colors, and, enjoy some cooler temperatures. In the meantime, I'm going to send you off with some Jeff Beck. Why? Because it's good stuff. We'll talk to y'all later, folks. Night, folks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.